fleeting glimpses of things seen through a veil, darkly. Do we understand the meaning of these visions of life? Why we are here and how little of our existence we truly understand? Tonight we will talk of these things on The Other Side. Welcome to The Other Side. I am Jim Harold. So glad to be with you once again. And I think we have a very fascinating story. When I saw the cover of this book, I said we must have this author on. It's such an interesting concept. I'm talking about Jot. When things disappear and come back or relocate, and why it really happens. I think all of us have had this experience. You misplace something, or at least you think you misplace it, and you say, like, I swear I put it down there. And then you may find it weeks, months, years later in a totally unexpected place. Fascinating. Our guest today is the author of this book, Jot, Mary Rose Barrington. And she has a long-term history, a Renaissance woman indeed. She's been a lawyer, a charity administrator. She's assisted in the management of property interest, finance, and welfare for the groups of almshouses. And she's calling us today from Britain, and we're so glad to have her on now. She is now a vice president of the Society for Psychical Research, which brings her full circle back to the time when she became president of the Oxford University SPR Psychical Research, having been a main interest since her school days. And we're so glad to have Mary Rose with us. Thank you for joining us on the program and talking about Jot.
Well, thank you for having me.
So, I'm certainly familiar with that situation where you think you know where you put something, or something just kind of disappears in the thin air. And I always just assumed it was just happenstance. You know, I forgot where I put it. Somebody else picked it up. Seems like there's much more to this. Talk to us about the concept of Jot.
Well, of course, one has to say that a lot of these things are pure mistake, and so you need something that gives you some kind of certainty that you really knew where you saw this article last, preferably quite recently. You just put it there, and so you you feel a sense of certainty that there it was, and it has disappeared. I suppose it was a personal disappearance in my own life that made me think, if this really happens, well, it's even stranger than the usual phenomena of psychical research, which is pretty sensational. If you think of the things that happened in poltergeist cases, you know, stones raining from the sky and sometimes coming through the house and doors locking and unlocking themselves, and beams jumping out of bags, you know, a whole variety of strange things. But, you know, if a milk bottle throws itself across the room and bits get embedded in the wall, well, it's still a milk bottle, you know, it was there before and it's still there. But it is actually much more disconcerting when something that you looked on as a permanent item in the world suddenly dematerializes. You may have a materialization at a seance with a physical medium, and we have a really very good testimony that these bizarre things do happen. But in normal life, you know, if you're just sitting at your desk or doing something in the kitchen, to have an article, and sometimes quite a complex article, like a bunch of keys, disappear, well, dematerialize is the way I put it, that actually makes you query what's going on in what you take to be the real world. So it's even more sensational. And you have to then starts formulating, well, speculations as to how this might be possible. And inevitably you come to the view that that maybe there is some kind of illusion going on that makes you think that things are real, in the same way that a hypnotist can make people perfectly certain that there is some obstacle that's between them and the thing they're trying to get to. As far as they're concerned, it is a physical object. And it stops them crossing it. It blots out whatever is behind it. And it seems completely real.
Now,
so I can,
go ahead.
Yes, sorry, shall I pause there?
No, I was just going to ask you. It seems like that not all jots, though, are created equal, that there are different kinds of jots. Is that true?
Well, I think I've identified six categories. I think another writer, Tony Jinks, thinks it can be reduced to four. But the basic thing, really, is what I call a walkabout, which is when something dematerializes, ceases to exist at one location, and then either quite quickly or, as you say, after a long time, you find it in a completely different location and you feel perfectly certain that you did not put it there. And I have a nice case of a woman who had an appointment diary that simply lived quite permanently on the table beside where she sat. And it vanished one day. And I think it was a few days later, she went out into the garden to hang some clothes on a line. And finding it was occupied by somebody else, she went down to the bottom of the garden, where there was another line, and there she spotted underneath a bit of garden rubbish, there was her appointment book. Well, I think she has reason for being perfectly certain that she didn't go down to the bottom of the garden and take it there. And another garden finding, I think, took place in November. That's right. There's a woman whose reading glasses stay in a fixed position and disappeared from the house. And then in the middle of November, she had occasion to go into the garden to take a surveyor to the end of the garden where he could take a look at the roof. And there, hanging on the branch of a tree, were her reading glasses.
Wow.
So these are not things you do really in a sort of momentary state of inattention. So
go ahead. Go ahead.
Those are the sort of cases, I think, where you feel certainty that something real has happened.
Now, maybe the skeptic perhaps would say, well, just some odd happenstance, some weird coincidence. Maybe somebody else found them and threw them away and they landed in a tree or something like that. Why do you think, based on your research, that there's more at play here, perhaps? Maybe something supernatural in some way. What has led you to that conclusion?
Well, it had to be something paranormal. You know, it is... In its way, it is part of the paranormal repertoire, but you do expect to find it happening in the presence of a medium or someone who's trying to do something. You don't really expect it to just intrude upon your everyday life. Sometimes one can see a reason for these things. I mean, one special case of walkabout is the comeback, which is quite striking because it generally happens quite quickly. And that is, you look for something you're quite sure you put on in a certain place, and it's not there. And so you go wandering around, you know, trying to find where you may have put it. And then you come back and you see that there it is, you know, sitting there all the time. And sometimes you can see a sort of reason for this. you know, if you've got an obligation to go out and meet someone and you can't find your keys and you have to ring them and put it off, and then, great relief, you no longer have to go out, and there are the keys back again, you know, you can see some sort of advantage. Of course, there is such a thing as a negative hallucination, which means they are there all the time, but for some reason you don't see them. And so in the case of comeback, you generally need some special circumstances to feel, well, it wasn't just a visual hallucination. I mean, my friend, in his little kitchenette, very primitive arrangements for cooking his food he had, and he had two very large boxes of matches, except one was really an empty box and contained the matches that he had used. And these simply sat side by side to light the gas cooker that he had further along the worktop. And so he went to pick one up. Normally they lived side by side, but he looked for the box of matches, found there was only one instead of two, and picked it up to see if it contained the matches. But it didn't. It was the waste one. So he put it down again, wandered away to look for some means of lighting the gas, which he found. And then he looked down, and there were two large matchboxes side by side. He came and told me about this almost immediately. I mean, that it would be not only a visual hallucination, it would be a tactile one too, because you couldn't really pick up one without intruding into the space where the other one ought to be. So that is one of my favorite comebacks.
Now, another thing you talk about is the odd jot. What is an odd jot?
Well, that's where something happens that in the physical world simply shouldn't happen, and in fact couldn't happen. And I actually had a personal odd jot, which again made me feel that I must think more about this sort of thing. And that was a duvet cover, my own duvet cover, that had a very, very fiddly little zip across the top. Very difficult to undo, very difficult to do up. You had to hold the material together to make it move at all in either direction. Anyway, I unzipped the thing, put it in the washing machine, then in the dryer. And when I took it out, it was very mysterious. I just couldn't find the opening. And then it looked rather ragged, and I realized it was inside out, and saw some pencil line eventually, that I realized was the back of the zip, from the usual point of view, and it was closed up to the hilt. There was just a little hole at the top where I was able to insert the point of a pair of nail scissors. And then with someone else holding the material together, gradually eased the zip open. And when I had got it completely open, it occurred to me to wonder how this was possible, because it suddenly went into the wash unzipped. And how does a very fiddly, difficult zip do itself up with the zip on the inside in a washing machine or a dryer? Because a zip that moves easily is actually usually opened in a dryer, never closed. And as I say, this one couldn't be closed, except very, very carefully and the right way around. And so I realized I had actually destroyed a paranormal object that might have been used in evidence in favor of an odd job. So that was my odd job. The duvet, well, that turned itself out, of course, was fairly normal, but that it zipped itself up on the inside and right to the hilt. That's something that I contend in real life couldn't happen.
Now, let me ask you this. Do you think there's a trickster element to all of this?
No, I don't, actually. I think something totally radical, that actually the world around us, you know, the solid chairs we sit on, and indeed our solid selves, are really, they are equivalent to the hypnotist's imaginary object that he makes his subject see and feel, and that actually we are all really in a kind of hypnotic state, put there really by what you might call the grand hypnotizer, which is really the what you might call the world mind. Well, the universe mind, probably a mind to which we all take part, but which does have a control center that tells us how to model the world, how to keep it completely consistent, and not, preferably, not jottling or doing anything else that really upsets our sense of, causal continuity.
Have you given any thought to the idea that we might just be part of a grand computer simulation of some type?
Well, I suppose computer simulation is a kind of analogy for my universal mind. Somehow, I feel that I don't know how conscious the whole thing is. You know, I don't know how planned. I don't really have this idea of a cosmic trickster. So, I feel that there are certain universal rules, and actually, for rather complicated reasons, I think the universal rule is probability. But I look on this world really as having the same relationship to the universal reality as our planet has to the solar system. It's not really very central. I feel that it's actually rather the product of a subdivision of the great mind, and that ordained, as far as our reality is concerned, that everything must be, or at least should be, causal. That there must be sequential causality. And starting, in the same way really that science tells us from particles, if you follow that through, you end up by getting the sort of world we have, which I have to say I look on as a very unsatisfactory world, bearing in mind that it's all based on, bigger things eating smaller things, and the amount of suffering that there is in the moment you really get into the animal world. So I feel that our world is something of a failed enterprise. But I feel that that's only part of the larger reality. And the larger reality is what we have glimpses of when we actually see or experience something that is not sequential. And if it's not causal and sequential, it's paranormal. Because that's what being paranormal is. It is outside the scientific reality, which is causal.
Now, what do you think about this idea of the multiverse or multiple realities? In other words, there might be infinite instances of Mary Rose, and there might be infinite instances of Jim, and in one of those, I'm interviewing you, and this one, and another one, maybe you're interviewing me about a book I've written. do you hold out any thought that that might be part of the picture?
Well, I suppose it doesn't really play any part in my what I call a theory, but other people might call a speculation. I suppose I don't really think in those terms. I think it's, in a sense, multiverse is a scientific concept. And as I'm not a physicist, I'd rather keep clear of scientific concepts, except, of course, that I do draw an analogy between my theory, if you like, and the what I think is known as the Copenhagen interpretation of quantum reality, which is that something unobserved, in a large sense of the word, lapses into, what they call waveform. And if it's observed, in other words, taken note of in some sort of way, it's in particle form and therefore part of our reality. And actually, I think I'm seeing exactly the same thing about my theory, which is that if out of some kind of expediency or out of plain fatigue, you fail to mentally to observe something, it will relapse into its primary form, which is not observable.
So
it is a kind of soup.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
And it really comes back into reality if and precisely where and when you actually mentally observe it again. So when you find it in the garden, it hasn't traveled from the living room to the garden, or traveled from Latvia to London, where one thing is said to have done. It actually it deactualizes where you had placed it, and when you bring it back, it reactualizes where you find it.
And it's interesting. And so, it's interesting because I'm looking at a calculator here on my desk.
Yeah.
So if I see this calculator and then I don't see it, the calculator hasn't gone away, but my ability to perceive it has somehow failed, like a glitch. And I won't, I won't see that again until somehow mentally I can reprocess it properly and see it if it quote goes away or goes missing. Of course, that's only a percentage of these things. Sometimes we just actually misplace things, but some of these more maddening ones, or where they turn up in weird places, or you know that you put it there, maybe had witnesses, those may be cases where we're seeing the jot.
Yes, that is exactly my idea, yes.
I have to say, and I'll say this quickly and let you go, and I'm sorry about that, but I have a radio that I lost about 20 years ago, and I got a replacement and everything, and it still drives me crazy. I don't know, the little radio about the size of your book, actually, and I still haven't been able to find it, and it I've racked my brain. It's one of those things. Monetarily, it makes no sense. It was maybe a $60 or $70 radio. Nothing, not that I'm going to go bankrupt buying a new one. It still bugs me.
I can imagine.
Well, sir, maddening.
I suppose your unconscious might easily have said, "It's time I got something new."
Ah.
I think this is what happened with, I think, my favorite case of the orange-colored washing-up bowl. You know, some English, most English kitchens are rather restricted in size, and Rao doesn't have a double sink. Most people have one sink and then use a washing up bowl inside it, and a plastic bowl. Well, this lady, who's actually quite prominent in the Scottish SPR, she just washed up the dishes from dinner for herself and her husband. And fortunately, her husband was out walking the dog, so he's out of the picture. And she put it away. She put it on the draining board, the bowl. Then she put away the few dishes in a cupboard and turned round to put the bowl back in the sink. But the bowl was no longer on the draining board. And so, in a sense, people always look and see what could have happened to it. Naturally, she searched the kitchen, though, in a sense, there's no way that the bowl was going to jump off the draining board somewhere else in the kitchen. But anyway, she looked. When her husband came back, he searched the kitchen for the missing bowl. Neither could find it. A few days later, she bought a new one, red this time, fortunately. And a few days later, or perhaps a week or two later, she wanted something, yes, the pressure cooker that she very seldom used. And to get at it, she had to pull a table away from the front of a cupboard, open the cupboard and pull out the pressure cooker and, you know, use it and then put it back and rearrange the kitchen. Well, so she pulled away the table, opened the cupboard, but she couldn't actually get the pressure cooker out. It was jammed in. And the husband came to the rescue and found the orange washing-up bowl was the article that was actually impeding the removal of the pressure cooker. And it was indeed the same one that had disappeared. It still had a bit of dirty water in it and a teaspoon. And so here we have it within the space of a few minutes while she turned her back to put the dishes back in the cupboard. The bowl got into the cupboard where you have to get access by pulling a table aside and opening the cupboard, and pushed it in so that it jammed something else. Well, you know, you don't do that inadvertently or, you know, while you're in a moment of inattention. It's one of the clearest cases I've ever come across a walkabout. But actually what I started by saying was that she was so attached to this orange bowl and really wanted to get another one, and yet something inside her might have said, it's time you got a new one, because these things do get a bit scuffy in the end. So I can see that her unconscious, which seems to have a life of its own and seems to win most of these arguments, simply told her to get rid of it. And that is how she got rid of it. And it came back because she had a new one to replace it.
Very, very interesting. I love this concept. It's a great concept and very interesting.
Well, I think it fits a lot of the facts. All one can say with these theories that are not about science. They're about what I call non-science, which is the non-causal. So they're not scientific, and they can't be scientifically tested. All one can say of them is that they're consistent with a lot of other facts.
Well, I'll never think about losing objects the same again. and maybe I'll be a little easier on myself as well.
Yes. What good has it done me? Has it given me a lesson of some sort? Has it been useful in some way?
Well, indeed, the book is Jot, When Things Disappear and Come Back or Relocate, and Why It Really Happened. Something I never really thought about, but this has been very mind-expanding. Mary Rose, where can people find the book?
Well, I'm afraid on Amazon. The universal place, yes.
Yes, Amazon. Yes, very good. Certainly Amazon.com, and we'll have a link in the show notes. Mary Rose Barrington, yes. Thank you for joining us today on The Other Side.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me.
So next time you lose something, be a little kinder on yourself. Maybe it's Jot. Thank you for jotting us into your schedule today and taking a listen to The Other Side. We'll talk to you next time. Have a great week, everybody. Bye-bye.